I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. And this hour, I love shows like this, we're going to talk about dolphins. Our guest is the author of Voices in the Ocean, A Journey into the Wild and Haunting World of Dolphins. She was on... Well, her father died, and it was a sudden death, and she was grief-stricken, as she says he was the central part of her universe. And Maui became the place that helped her heal, but it was really the dolphins that helped her heal. She is an interesting person. She competes at open water swimming contest in the ocean, and she's been doing this for a number of years, but she had never been in the water with wild dolphins. But that day, a pod of dolphins came and surrounded her, and she says she became obsessed with the notion that these animals were able to make her feel better. Thus began her investigation of dolphins, their minds, their empathy, how they went from the land to the sea, why people still hunt them, and what they do with them, why people capture them and put them in parks. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? But this mysterious brain that they have and the fact they can recognize themselves and they're considered just highly, highly intelligent intrigues all of us. And so we're delighted to have Susan with us to talk about all of this hour. Susan is the author of a number of books, actually, including the one we're talking about, Voices in the Ocean, A Journey into the Wild and Haunting World of Dolphins. Also author of The Wave, In Pursuit of the Rogues, Freaks, and Giants of the Ocean. And The Devil's Teeth, A True Story of Obsession and Survival Among America's Great White Sharks. Those books are New York Times bestsellers, and her latest book is also a bestseller. Her writing has appeared in Esquire, National Geographic, Fortune, Time. She worked at the Oprah Magazine, at Times, Sports Illustrated, for Women Outside Magazine, and we're just delighted to talk about these creatures that fascinate so many of us. Susan, hello.
Hello.
Oh, Susan, you're in Maui.
Yes, I am.
Oh, it is so nice to imagine Maui. And thank you so much for the book and what you've done here. So many of us are just captivated by these creatures. But you had one of those moments. Isn't it strange that after all these years of being a competitive swimmer in the open ocean, it took that particular moment when you went to heal out in Maui and this pod of dolphins surrounded you in your grief? I mean, it's spiritual almost, isn't it?
Oh, I get that. That question comes up all the time, and people often have their own experiences to share where they were at a particular, needed a particular moment in their life and had a, you know, their own sort of transcendent dolphin experience in the wild. Because, yeah, I would swim, I surf, I do a lot of things in the ocean, and I come across everything. I had many, many encounters with sharks, and I absolutely love sharks. All kinds of other creatures, but all the friends I have in Hawaii would constantly run into dolphins, and I never did. And so that time that I did go swimming by myself, and in fact was sort of a little bit numb, and didn't really care if I was by myself, if I was offshore, if something happened, didn't really care at all. That was when they came.
Remarkable. And thus began this real investigation and thorough investigation of dolphins. Let's go way back, because I guess I forgot, or I maybe never even know, that these knew that these were land creatures, and then they just underwent this real transformation to become what we know of as dolphins now. What did they used to look like 55 million years ago?
It's such a funny, the evolution of dolphins, I had to check and double check and ask people. They've been in the water for 55 million years, but their 95 million years is their total evolutionary path.
And
it started, they were described to me as small hoofed wolves. So and it's a creature called Pachycetus. And if you look at it online, it's very hard to describe, but it's almost like a sort of an otter crossed with a wolf. And with hooves. And the closest living relative, interestingly, to dolphins these days are hippos.
Hmm.
So it's a very weird thing. They've shape-shifted a lot. And so at a certain point, they started, there were a lot of low-lying oceans around, for example, much of North America was under these sort of low oceans. And so these wolf-like creatures started going into the water a little bit, and then they became more aquatic, they finally went into the water and stayed there. But at first, they didn't look anything like they look now. They were sort of huge, fierce creatures. They almost looked like whales with teeth. And at that particular moment, their brains weren't particularly impressive. They didn't have their high-frequency hearing. So they went through yet another really big shape-shifting evolutionary change to become this sort of large brain, smaller body, less formidable predators, but more social animals that they are now. Mm. So this has been this wild ride. It would be as if we had become giants and then dwarves and then we lived in... I mean, they've gone through it.
Well, let's talk about those brains more because I find those fascinating. They were found to contain, you write, econoneurons, specialized cells that can relate to higher notions like empathy, intuition, communication, and self-awareness. They have more of those neurons than we do.
Three times more, supposedly. This is science that's still underway. So the scientist that helped me fact-check the book said, you know, that early studies suggest that they have far more of these neurons than we do. They developed them much earlier than we did, obviously, because their brains that they are carting around right now, which are like ours but much older and in a lot of ways wired very differently, they've had them for probably 35 million years, and we've had ours for somewhere between 800,000 and 200,000 years. So it's a really different ancestry in terms of just time. But this, what you're talking about are these neurons that are unusual. They only show up in certain brains. They're also known as spindle cells. They don't know what they're really for, but they definitely relate to certain types of social abilities. And the neuroscientist, the cetacean neuroscientist that I spent time with in the book, who I just adored, said that it also may be a type of neuron that helps large packets of information sort of get processed in the brain. So it's very unusual, definitely relates to higher notions of the mind, and mm-hmm. they have a lot more of them than we do.
Mm. Isn't that something? They're smarter maybe than we are, huh?
Well, you know, this becomes all very complex because smarter is very loaded, and intelligence is very loaded. We don't even really know what intelligence means. They have these incredible cognitive abilities. And in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there was a scientist over in Honolulu who did really extensive and rigorous testing to find out, okay, so you've got this big brain. Now, what are you using it for? And he found out, this is actually my favorite fact about dolphins, that dolphins understand syntax in a sentence. Mm-hmm. So they can tell how the word order of a sentence changes the meaning of a sentence. And he taught them hand language, so you can communicate with them, and sort of gestural sign language combined with sounds, and really discovered that they're incredibly fast cognitively. So I think that's really the closest thing that we can say about being smart. Those are abilities that we can measure in the brain. And intelligence is just something entirely different that we really don't understand. But it's very clear that an animal doesn't end up with a brain like dolphins have if they're not using it for something
right.
really, really important.
Yeah. And in terms of empathy, you also have a favorite story about what happened to a scientist who was working with a pod off the coast of California. It's quite a story. Please tell us.
Well, so in the beginning when I started researching the book, I knew that there were a lot of sort of stories that I would describe as lore, you know, just stories about dolphins doing amazing things. And as a journalist, I really wanted to take some of those stories and fact check them and find out, okay, did this really happen? And if it did, what does that say about dolphins? So I began to look for examples of stories that where there were a bunch of scientists there. It could be verified through checking with them. It could be that there were a number of eyewitnesses. Maybe there were photographs. And that story involves a scientist named Madalena Berzi, who was studying dolphins along the coast of Los Angeles. And she was following in her research boat just a pod of bottlenose dolphins in sort of a gloomy day, not too far offshore, outside of L.A. with a bunch of research assistants in her boat, and the dolphins were ignoring them and swimming along and hunting. And they were used to the research boat. So they finally found a school of fish, and, you know, once they do that, the dolphins work together to corral the fish, and then they can all feed. But before they started to do that, but before anybody fed, one of the dolphins turned away from the pod and just swam at top speed right out to sea. And the scientists noticed that because it was really unusual behavior. I mean, the whole point is to eat the fish. So one dolphin after another broke away. They swam about 3 miles straight out to sea, and the scientists followed them in their boat. And when they got out there, the dolphins arranged themselves into a perfect circle. And in the center of the circle, the scientists saw something floating, and they went over to check what it was, and it was a girl's body. Mm. She was a teenager, young teenager, and she had a plastic bag strung around her neck with her identification and a suicide note, and they were able to save her. She was moments away from drowning, and she was saved by the scientists, and I don't know how you explain that one, but that I typically tell that story because it really illustrates something that I'm very interested in as a writer, and that's obviously I'm fascinated by science, but I'm also interested in the things that we can't explain, that we don't know, that we may be discounting because we don't understand them or can't see them. I don't know how you explain a story like that. And, you know, frankly, I'm sort of delighted that we can't explain everything.
And it's good to know that it happens. We are talking this hour, and we'll be welcoming your phone calls in just one moment. Susan Casey has a new book, and it's about dolphins. It's wonderful because dolphins are so incredibly fascinating. Susan's book is Voices in the Ocean, A Journey into the Wild and Haunting World of Dolphins. Obviously, they're not always, happy, and they're not always nice. There are dolphins who do things that aren't very great. There are people, there's a really bizarre story early in the book of a woman who has, it's hard to say, she has a 15-year marriage with a dolphin. I don't know. Maybe those kinds of things work out, but we'll, of course, have to talk about that. We'll talk about the problems they're facing in terms of the noise in the ocean and the chemicals in the ocean and people who are hunting them for whatever reason. We'll find out what those are. Susan has spent quite a bit of time discovering these miraculous creatures. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network. We're talking about dolphins with Susan Casey. Her book is Voices in the Ocean, A Journey into the Wild and Haunting World of Dolphins. And we're opening phone lines for her as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. We've done several shows because I find them fascinating as well, Susan, on dolphins. And I remember somebody talking about language. We were talking to somebody who was trying to break their language code who said that, and I think about them, and I wonder if you do, that they have a kind of alien intelligence that's sharing our planet, and watching them may be the closest we'll ever come to encountering ET. Do you think that's true?
Well, you know, the thing is, we tend to see everything in a sort of an anthropocentric way, and it's in some ways it's endearing, in other ways it's incredibly limited. But there's alien intelligence all over the place in the ocean. I mean, an octopus is a perfect example, and they're unbelievably cognitively advanced, but they're completely different than we are, or they just may have a completely different way of perceiving everything, and that is likely the case with a creature like a dolphin. Their primary senses aren't visual because, you know, you're in the ocean.
Right.
Half the time it's dark, and that's if you're in the depths that there even is any light. So they can't rely on their vision, so their primary sense is acoustic. And we don't see the world through that prism. So there's obviously this completely different understanding of reality and what matters. And it's very, very hard for us to infer anything about their world by thinking about it through our own perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So I completely agree with you, but I think dolphins aren't the only alien intelligence here.
Yeah, and there's so much in the ocean we don't know about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many coming in. Chris and Nina. Hi, Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Just a couple of things we saw in Hawaii. We were off the coast of Kona with sunlight on the water where they took us out, and we actually got to swim with pods of dolphins, and there are other boats in the bay off Kona. And basically, we just drifted. They would put us in with snorkel gear, and the spinner dolphins would go from boat to boat and group to group, and they would be doing spins and cartwheels. They would come by and lay on their sides and look at you real close, blow a bubble, kick their tail, and away they would go. And it was just the neatest thing because they were in their own setting. They were not penned in at all. There was nothing except what they wanted to do going on. It was all very controlled as far as people not touching them or interacting with them in any inappropriate way. But it was just unbelievable experience. The other experience they had was with the captive bottlenose dolphins at the Hilton Waikoloa Village. And it was an adult female with a very small young dolphin. And she would come by the pool where we were standing on a bridge, roll over on her side, and she would take her fin and flip the younger dolphin onto its side so it could look up at us. And it would go under the bridge very slowly, and then they would kick their tails and take off. So they are very interactive, whether they're captive or not, but I definitely recommend going with the free ocean swim.
Susan?
Yeah, I mean, once you start to understand the natural history of dolphins and, you know, how social they are and how, you know, what's important to a dolphin, the relationships with other dolphins, the ability to hunt in these sort of complex conditions in the ocean. They swim up to 70 or 80 miles a day. You can't look at them in captivity and think that there's anything going on there that that is right. I mean, it just there's just no place for a dolphin in a swimming pool. But it sunlight on water and the other outfitters, a lot of the other outfitters in Kona are very conscious of the dolphins. And I write about that in my book. And also often recommend that people who really want to swim in the ocean with dolphins go to Kona because that's a great place to do it. However, something that's happening right now, which you may not be aware of, is that there is pending legislation to prohibit these outfitters. And I think the reason why it's happening is because there's now something like 27 of them. And there are so many boats that it's becoming, you know, because when the dolphins come in at night into the bays where they can, you can swim with them, they're resting. You know, they're swimming around. Dolphins, they never completely go to sleep. Half their brain is always on, and that's because they're an air-breathing mammal that lives in the ocean. So they can never completely go unconscious or they'll drown. But so there's a sense that it's a little too stressful for them when there are a ton of boats. I'm a little disappointed in this regulation, although some scientists that I really respect think it's a good idea. And the reason I'm disappointed is because my feeling is that anybody like this listener who wants to get into 70 feet of open ocean with a dolphin is somebody who really, really should have that experience.
And, right.
And, you know, if we don't want people to be thinking that they must see dolphins in captivity, I mean, I really, the whole purpose of my work is to get people into the ocean and see what an incredible wonderland it is. I wish what they would do on the Big Island is create some sort of, I don't know, a consortium of boats, decide how many would be healthy for the dolphins. As this listener has pointed out, you can't, you know, the dolphins choose if they're going to come up to you in that environment. If they're too tired, they won't come to you. Let them not come if they don't want to. But it would be great if money could then go back to helping the dolphins in their wild environments. They certainly need that. Because another real irony about this is that every other year in Hawaii, they have these giant war games called RIMPAC, where all the navies of the world come and do everything from massive sonar training that is very difficult for the dolphins.
I'm
and
sure.
Missile testing. And so it's really hard for me to understand why small groups of people are that big of a problem. And I really dislike attempts to keep people from experiencing the ocean and its creatures. Of course I want the dolphins to be safe. Of course I want everything to be healthy. But that, as I said, most of the operators that I've met in Kona are incredibly conscious. I just wish there was a different, there was a compromise way that people could still do that. But in the meantime, if you're somebody who wants to do that, these laws have not gotten to, they're still pending. So you could go still probably for the next little while.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe you would say that we should focus our attention elsewhere. You write quite a bit about the tremendous problems for the dolphins' habitat, the overfishing, the pollution. There are really bad chemicals. They don't vanish. They bind to the fat of the dolphins. They are filled with mercury, heavy metals, insecticides, flame retardants, all of which weaken their immune system and make them more susceptible to viruses. And then you've mentioned some of the noise that they hear, which it's just so loud that it's impossible for them to tolerate it.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, their dominant senses are acoustic, and they're really sensitive, and they can hear at much higher frequencies than we can. And anybody who's ever, been subjected to noise against their will, I lived in Manhattan for 15 years, I've definitely had my share of jackhammers under my window. It's very, very stressful. It's very stressful to be subjected to noise. Sound is a pressure wave. And in the ocean, sound travels really fast, really far, and we're basically turning the oceans into this huge cacophony of noise. There's among that most the loudest noises that we can even make physically are the air cannons that are used to prospect oil and gas on the seafloor. Those are so loud that they even kill fish larvae.
Oh.
So they've been, it's fishermen that are really kind of standing up to that. The military is doing a lot of sonar training. They're ratcheting it up. They've been taken to court a number of times to ask them to move the training to areas that are not sensitive calving grounds or migration paths. That they really resisted that for a long time, but they lost some major lawsuits, particularly here in Hawaii. They lost a big one in California, too, and they've been sent back to the drawing board because 93 million square miles of ocean, there's got to be some areas that they can find to do it that aren't going to harm these animals.
Yeah. Chris, thanks so much for your call. Victoria in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Victoria.
Yes. This is a thing that I have found that had seen, and I'd never seen anybody talk about it. After the Challenger crash or explosion, I had sworn I was not going to cry anymore. And I was watching a program where the employees from NASA had gathered, and they were going to place a wreath in the ocean where the ship had gone down. And the helicopter flew over. Here, if I can read it. And as the crowd rose to observe, a minute of silence, a blue and white NASA helicopter carrying a wreath of white chrysanthemums adorned with seven red carnations passed low overhead. At 9:39 Central Standard Time, the precise moment of the Tuesday's explosion, the wreath was dropped by NASA officials 150 feet into the water. A NASA crew filmed the second helicopter flew along to record the gesture. It happened to capture a remarkable and touching moment one moment later. A school of dolphins swam to the surface, arced once in tight formation toward the bobbing flowers, and then disappeared with a splash back into the green waters below.
Oh, my.
Dolphins did not resurface. It was not possible to count them, but there appeared to be at least five, no more than seven.
Oh, my, what a story.
I've traveled all around the country to talk to people about my book. I hear stories like this, both like epic stories like that and little personal stories, and there are so many of them.
Hmm. So what does that mean? How do you take that in?
There's something really special going on. And as I said, I don't think we fully understand it, but it's just one of the things I really say in the book is, it's great to think with your mind. We're incredibly clever creatures, but we also have to, I believe this is part of our next evolution, is to also learn to listen to our hearts and think with our hearts and somehow combine those things. And if, whenever people ask me, do you think this really happened? Is this really true? It's like, well, do you feel it did? What does it feel like to you? For me, I think that's to me, that story makes perfect sense. It resonates, and I believe it wholeheartedly. I don't have any proof that it happened. But I'm sure somebody does.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the call, Victoria. And we'll take more of them in a moment. Susan Casey is our guest this hour, and Susan is talking about dolphins. Her latest book is wonderful. It looks at how they're being threatened. It looks at the mysterious nature of dolphins. Her book is Voices in the Ocean, A Journey into the Wild and Haunting World of Dolphins. And Susan is a competitive open water swimmer and really had never encountered dolphins before, but to try and deal with the grief she was feeling after the sudden death of her father, she went to Maui and she was doing open water swimming and all of a sudden was surrounded by a pod of dolphins, and it eased her sorrow. And so she began to really study these phenomenal creatures. And so that's what we're doing this hour. And welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655 is the number here on the Ideas Network. All right, we're talking about dolphins this hour. Susan Casey is our guest. Her book is Voices in the Ocean, A Journey into the Wild and Haunting World of Dolphins. It's a wonderful book. She's been looking at this subject and swimming with the dolphins in the open ocean for some time now, and finds them captivating, and who wouldn't? Can we just spend a little while on communication? Why is it hard to crack their language code, Susan?
Well, the word, again, back to the sort of the word thing. Language, there's, first of all, it's clear that they communicate in a million different ways, by everything from their sonar to their, they have a million different types of communications that they do, but so far scientists haven't been able to actually determine that there's a language. They have specific sort of definitions of what that means. But let's just, for the sake of, let's just say they do have a language. They have names. They are given names at birth, just like we are. A dolphin gives a signature whistle that they keep their entire lives, given to them by their mother or one of the sort of mature females, because most of these dolphin species are matriarchal. And they recognize their signature whistles even after 20 years apart. So they definitely use that name. And the idea that they have a word for themselves and not for anything else in their environment seems pretty far-fetched. So, but now, so there's a scientist named Denise Herzing who's been working with a pod of wild dolphins on the Bahama banks to try to crack communication. And one of the things that makes it very hard is that often when a dolphin makes a noise, you don't see any part of their face move. So you have to know which dolphin's making the noise in order to sort of draw some sort of reference point. I mean, there's no Rosetta Stone, although now that we know that they have a signature whistle for their names, it's an interesting place to start. And they're incredible mimics. So a lot of the times in the past, scientists like John Lilly, who was sort of the father of trying to understand dolphin communication, they thought they could teach them English. I mean, they don't have vocal cords, but they can make a lot of sounds. So he tried very hard to take young dolphins and train them to speak our language. And now I think the efforts are more along the lines of, let's try to understand what they're gesturing at, what they're doing with their whistles and clicks and buzzes. And there are some sounds they make that we know what they mean. There's one where they clap their jaws that is used as sort of a gesture of anger. So in a way, they are communicating. They're just not communicating in English.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And if you watch them, you can sort of tell what they're up to. But Denise Herzing, and her she's a Wild Dolphin Project in the Bahamas, if people are interested to find out more. She's doing really cool things with pattern recognition software and trying to figure out with this group of dolphins that she knows in the ocean who's speaking, under what circumstances, and maybe try to make some progress on this.
Let's go to Mike in Appleton next. Hello, Mike.
Hello, ladies. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Mike?
Doing well, thanks.
Good.
I just have a quick, funny story to tell. I was in the U.S. Coast Guard back in the 80s, and we were up in the North Atlantic, and it was a very foggy evening, and I had to stand fog watch. And in the water was a bioluminescent organism, and when the ship goes through the water, it breaks up the water, and you could see the glowing water. So I'm standing on watch, and I see what appears to be a torpedo coming right at the bow of the ship, which is where I was standing. And my role was to let the bridge know if there was any problems out there. Well, I should have said torpedo, 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 and I locked up. I couldn't say anything. But as it turns out, it was a dolphin, and it started swimming along the bow of the ship. The embarrassment that I would have suffered would probably still be going on to this day had I actually said torpedo.
They love to surf. You want to get a dolphin to come to you, just be in a boat that has some wake. And it's amazing how fast they can go. They're so streamlined. And,
yes, they are.
I mean, I love actually hearing stories from people who are fishermen or Navy or Coast Guard, because they're the ones that have the amazing ocean stories.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the people and where it's happening in the world and why in the world these glorious creatures would be hunted the way they've been hunted.
Well, there's a couple places. The one that people I think are probably most familiar with is in this small fishing town in Japan called Taiji, that was the subject of that Oscar-winning documentary, The Cove, a few years back. And there were other Japanese towns that had done this sort of, they call it a drive fishery, because the dolphins are, noise is used to drive them into coves, and then they're often killed, but the sort of the dirty secret underneath, the other dirty secret, is that they sell a lot of these animals live to marine parks.
Mm.
And those are very lucrative sales, so that's largely what's supporting these. You know, they're really heinous hunts. They ecosystem-wise, they're devastating. They've managed to wipe out lots of different species of dolphins. Some towns along that coast in Japan don't have any dolphins at all because they've killed them all. And there is also this sort of bizarre idea that's completely unsupported by reality, that if you get rid of the dolphins, there will be more fish for the humans. Because the ocean doesn't work that way. It's not a zero-sum game. The dolphins play a really important role in the ecosystem. So do sharks, and that all contributes to a healthy environment that produces fish. So I don't understand why they persist so stubbornly, except that the only answer that seems to explain it is because a young female bottlenose dolphin can be sold for about $250,000 U.S. to a marine park in China or the Middle East or Russia or something like that. A lot of countries won't import wild-caught dolphins, including the U.S., but lots of countries will. And that hunt is I don't think it would be still going on if it was all about eating dolphin meat, which is what they often say is the reason they do it. The dolphin meat is highly toxic. It's just so toxic that it could cause organ failure if you eat it. And so I can't believe it still goes on, that they are selling a lot of dolphins. They're killing fewer dolphins, but that also could be because they've killed so many, there aren't that many left.
Right. Well,
yeah,
Susan, hard to understand.
Yeah.
There's so much more to talk to you, but Mark in Green Bay did write this to you, and this is a good place for us to say farewell until we meet again. Read all your books and love them. Please keep it up. Thanks for all you do, Susan. So that's
Thank
nice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks
it's
so much
pleasure.
For being with us.
Okay.
Susan Casey, her latest book, it's in paperback, it's fascinating, is Voices in the Ocean, A Journey into the Wild and Haunting World of Dolphins.